This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is North South.
Hey everybody, Tim Kawakami here, recording on the North and South podcast with my co-host, the LA Times, Dylan Hernandez. Very quiet week in California sports, really nothing going on. Oh, wait a minute, the Chargers just fired their head coach and general manager, which I believe Dylan Hernandez created. He caused this. It wasn't the football, it was Dylan Hernandez putting his fist on the table and say, thou shalt not keep these guys employed, or something like that. But as always, we got to start with Shohei Ohtani. This is basically a Shohei Ohtani reaction, analysis, observation podcast, and I'm proud of that. Dylan, you're at the introductory press conference for Shohei Ohtani to the Dodgers. A lot of theater, it looked like very crowded, very busy. I don't think the Jung Ho Lee presser today at Oracle Park, which I may or may not end up going to, is going to be anything like that, but we'll see. What was a Shohei Ohtani presser like as someone who was there?
Well, they're just like, first of all, just the size of the crowd was just enormous, right? I'm not really sure the Dodgers are quite aware of what just hit them in a way.
So it's just media? You're saying, or were there other people there?
Just media. You know, the line to get in there stretched about 100 yards, and there were three like entry points, you know. Now, I was joking with the Japanese, right, where they check your bags and stuff, you know, and I was joking with the Japanese reporters how, first of all, you know, Japanese people would not like commit terrorism. So I just kind of questioned the use of the time. And if they were to, right, they wouldn't do something that obvious, you know, the invisible gases or something. I don't know if we got
the dark Dylan Hernandez starts this on a very dark path here.
But here's the thing, right, is that I think that, you know, there was a lot of security there, too much security. Right. And, you know, they look, and I don't really blame these people. They get orders, you know, keep the crowd here, whatever, you know, but at some point, you know, when we were surrounding Nesbalelo, Ohtani's agent, after kind of the formal part of the press conference, you know, they were like, okay, nobody get behind this table, you know, and Beth Harris of the AP, who I'm sure you know,
sure,
right, just the big crowd there just kind of, you know, moves over to that side, and next thing you know, some goon comes over. Starts like pushing. Yeah. So they here's the thing. So they
not exactly the most threatening human being in the whole world, Beth Harris.
No, you know, and so like they didn't, it didn't feel like they were ready for this. And I kind of question going forward, even, are they really ready to kind of deal with this? And, you know, could there potentially be like on field ramifications from this? You know, because the feeling that I'm getting right now is that they're really going to let, right, and Ohtani, you know, when he's with the Angels, Nesbalelo really kind of dictated the media policy, right? Which was, okay, he's going to talk when on the AC pitches, and that's going to be it. And, you know, obviously Ohtani's not pitching this year, but, you know, Balelo was saying, okay, yeah, we'll probably keep something kind of a similar schedule, like talking once a week. You know, it's one thing if, you know, you're asking, you know, a young player like Neto or Ohapi on the Angels to talk about Ohtani every single day, because the guy himself won't talk. It's a whole different dynamic if you go in there and you're asking, you know, say like a Freddie Freeman, right? Who's a very kind of cooperative guy. You know, sure, he'll take a few days of this, right? He'll say all the right things. Day five or six, right? I mean, this guy's an all-star. He's an eight-time all-star himself. He's a former MVP himself, you know? There's going to be, I think, an effect on the clubhouse there, right? I mean, the last time the Dodgers kind of let somebody kind of do whatever they wanted was Yasiel Puig. Now, I'm not comparing Ohtani to Puig in the sense that, right, I mean, you know, Ohtani doesn't have Puig's like self-destructive tendencies, you know, and I think that Ohtani will perform. Part of the problem with Puig was that he was very up and down. But I do think when you kind of create like one set of standards for like, you know, one person, one all-star, and, you know, because it's not outright, I think guys understand pecking orders, right? It's you know, sure, you afford Clayton Kershaw more rope than you do Dustin May. That's not the issue. The question is now is like, you do have Betts, you have Freeman, you know, you have Walker Buehler, who's pitched in big games, you know, and if Ohtani kind of gets a separate treatment, these things start becoming things, right? And in baseball, I think more than in any other sport, because the season is so long, spring training is long. These guys spend so much time together, right? Guys, I think more, right? Teams more than in like in other sports are willing to make trades, right? Just to get rid of like a negative clubhouse influence, just because it really does have a way of seeping into everybody's bones and then eventually affecting the play on the field. So, you know, I'm not really sure why they're so, you know, open to listening to, I mean, they're the Dodgers. Why are they listening to Nesbalelo?
Yeah,
just because he gave them Ohtani for free, basically, doesn't make him their PR director, you know.
Yep.
So kind of my initial thing, just kind of looking at this, is that's kind of what stood out a little bit, was just you kind of get the feeling, OK, right, even though he's kind of moved on to the bigger team. And here's the one thing, and I think I mentioned this before. Ohtani used to talk after every game that he played when he was in Japan.
Yeah.
So this whole not talking thing, this is an American, right? This is something that's happened since he came here, coincidentally or not, since he got with this agent. You know, and again, I just kind of feel the Dodgers are kind of bigger than this, right? Why are they?
And maybe they are. And maybe they are. Like, maybe this is the initial response moment. Right. You say everything in terms of like, okay, this is what you want, but then we're going to get to reality. I mean, who knows? But what are we talking about? I mean, were they going to have 200 Japanese media following every day? Like, there's going to be 200 of them in the clubhouse, 200 in the, you know, spring training. What kind of numbers are we talking about here, Dylan?
Yeah, my guess is it's going to be, you know, I think with the Angels, it was about 30 a day. Mm-hmm. There are only so many outlets. That's the reality, right? And so, you know, I could see 30 becoming 40, maybe becoming 50, right? Now, obviously, the first game that he plays, right, the game, right, the Dodgers are opening the season in Korea in late March, you know, because of the proximity to Japan. I mean, that might be the worst, right? There'll probably be like 500 there. You know, opening day here, my guess is it's going to be in the hundreds. On a day-to-day basis, though, right, it's, and that does change, again, the experience for everybody, right? Because they're, you know, for a midweek game in Pittsburgh now, they're going to be 50 as opposed to like four, you know? And again, and they're going to be desperate that, you know, for content, you know, and they're going to go to whatever player is at his locker. And again, you know, I think guys are willing to do this a few times. It's just, you know, and here's the one thing I think fundamentally, right? And somebody needs to explain this to Ohtani. I did try to kind of lay this out in this column, is how, you know, in Japan, these teams, with the exception of Hiroshima, which is owned by Hiroshima, the prefecture, the teams are all owned by corporations, right? And so the existential purpose of these teams is to promote the parent company, right? So, for example, Ohtani used to play for the Nippon Ham Fighters, which is there to promote the Nippon Ham brand, right? It's like a food processing company. Whereas in the United States, baseball in and of itself is a business. And, you know, when you sign a professional contract, I think most of the players, maybe not anymore, they used to at least have this understanding, right, that you also have an obligation to sell this thing now, right? And part of that is by addressing the media, right? Like, you want to spur discussion about this, right? So that, like, we can talk about it, like, on this podcast, for example, you know? And that's how you kind of grow the game. And I think that that's something that, right, players understand. And usually, look, obviously, certain guys are going to be more in demand than others. Everybody kind of gets that. I think when you start getting into problems is when one guy kind of refuses to shoulder his share of the burden and thereby passes that burden on to his teammates. You know, and again, I think it's one thing, you know, for, you know, on a team like the Angels that's not contending and a lot of these guys are just happy to be in the big leagues, for Ohtani to pass the buck to them. It's a whole different thing if Ohtani's, right, because he won't talk, now all of a sudden Mookie Betts has to talk about it, or Freddie Freeman has to talk about
it. How did Mike Trout handle that? I don't sense Trout, that he loved
Trout,
it.
Trout, well, Trout was injured a lot,
yeah.
You know, so he wasn't around much. But you could even see, you know, Trout's like a Trout is as agreeable. You know, Trout's one of these guys, honestly, like every he doesn't say a ton. But he's one of those guys, whenever you go talk to him and you leave his locker room, you're like, you feel good, right? Like, oh, man, like this good guy, you know? Then you go back and listen to the tape and you realize he said nothing. But, you know, and he's pretty, and you can even see, like, with him, too. Like, I think at some point it started to wear on him, right? And I think, again, if it would have been a different thing if Trout is in there every day, you know, and he becomes kind of the de facto team spokesman. And he's Mike Trout and he starts getting asked, Ohtani, and that's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that's, again, starts becoming an issue. So, you know, I'd be very right. Cause I mean, you covered Bonds, right?
Sure.
You know, now granted, again, that's a different type of personality. Ohtani does seem a lot more agreeable than that, but it creates a certain feel in that locker room, right? Yeah. There's a certain,
just the physicality of it, 50 different, even if it's 50 new media people in there crowding around. It's just like you've been in a Lakers locker room. It gets crowded. It just, that's the reality of it. And you go to another locker, like, oh my God, it's a different feel because there's only six people in here, media people. Yeah. I mean, again, you know, will the Dodgers care about it if they're winning? No. But you're right. I think it's legitimate. I was thinking about that if the Giants sign Ohtani, they clearly would want him. He's a great player with the marketing and all that. But if you got to split up the clubhouse, largely through no fault of Ohtani's, just the way life goes, they're not going to like it. The other players are going to, you know, they're going to be looking over their shoulders about it. And at some point, let's say he starts off and he's not hitting that great for the Dodgers, and the team is 15-17, and they're still got 50 people in there trying to think about how they're, you know, who's talking to Ohtani, who's taking batting practice with Ohtani, who's whatever. I can imagine that there would be some building pressures. Again, I don't think Dodgers care that much about it, but you're right to circle it. And I'm, you know, we all think about, because we're all around physically, we feel the physicalness of it, the physicalness in the press box, in the locker room, just around everybody at press conferences. And I do wonder, and yeah, that moment, if they're shoving around reporters, if they're scared already, that to me, that's scared security people. And I can't stand scared security people. I understand they have a job to do. But mostly they're trying to get into it. They want to be part of it, right? They want to feel like I'm bigger than you. So you can't, I'm here and you're not. And that's crap. And I like Beth. So this pisses me off hearing that. There's no reason to do stuff like that. And it just leads me to believe that, yeah, the Dodgers might be a little overwhelmed by this. Spring training, they're going to get overwhelmed by this, Dylan, right? It's going to be an onslaught and they're going to get all scared. And then what do? And then what does Freddie Freeman think of that? And then what everyone else there, Tyler Glass now, who they just traded for and signed. But we'll see. This happens when you're that big of a team. It's a Lakers like thing, but it's beyond all that because obviously the different culture and the different media. But I was thinking about that even before all this, and this is just underlining it. He's gonna play great. He's gonna be great, but there will be a bit of a load with this. Is Dave Roberts gonna handle it? How's every, you know, he's used to being in the big market, big scrutiny, but how's he gonna handle it? And you know, and I thought it was interesting. Plashy wrote about it. You know, Ohtani has, it's been reported, he does have this clause where if Mark Walter, the owner, or the governor, whatever they call him, or Andrew Friedman, the team president, are no longer with the team. Either one of them, right? It's either one of them.
Yes. Yeah.
Then he can choose to opt out. He can go.
Right.
But not Dave Roberts. Now, I wouldn't have expected Dave Roberts to be in that, but it is notable that he's not in that. It's not clearly considered a principal. All true. But what kind of dynamic does that have on the team?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting, right? Because actually the pressure should be on Andrew Friedman.
Yes.
Right? I mean, they have basically, Ohtani is playing almost for free in a way, right? They're going to make, Bill Shaken, my colleague, has a story up on LATimes.com right now.
LATimes.com.
About, right, that they, I mean, this is the one contract that could literally actually pay for itself, right? You know, the Lakers sold like a uniform patch. I think the Yankees did too for $25 million. I mean, annually. So that, I mean, that's already more than half of the AAV of this, you know, of this deal. And so with the savings, I think the pressure should be on Friedman to now, right? Okay, you better do something with this money now, right? They have an obvious need for pitching. You know, they just, right, completed a trade for Glasnow, which I'm not sure, man. I mean, this guy, right, last year, I mean, I think he pitched like 20 games or something. It's the most, right, 120 innings. It's the most he's ever pitched before. This is the kind of, this is a big money version of the mistake they have made year after year, right? When they signed Brandon McCarthy and Scott Kazmir, they love these broken down guys. Hey, look how smart we are. We found this guy. We're bringing this guy off the scrap heap and we're going to sew him back together and he's going to thrive under us because we're so smart.
And the Giants have some of this too, by the way. Yes, Farhan's already coming from the Dodgers. Like they
right, yeah. I guess those were in part. Yeah. Zaidi's fault too, but like, so, you know, now that I think this move would be probably viewed with this move would be under a lot more scrutiny probably if Friedman didn't have this, protection now, because, you know, as well as things has gone here, I do think in the last couple of years, the fan base here has gradually started to change, right? I mean, they obviously, you know, McCourt's, you know, kind of ran the team into the ground. And so like initially Guggenheim comes in and they're spending all this money and they make this, right, ridiculous, like Adrian Gonzalez trade where they also took Beckett and Crawford just to get Gonzalez. And it's like, okay, these guys are like really all in. And eventually though, the people in this market are spoiled. I think they got really spoiled by the Shaq and Kobe Lakers, you know, where winning kind of all of a sudden felt like a birthright. And in the last couple of years, it's really kind of shifted on the management, right? Because again, the problem is easily identifiable. They can't pitch, right? They don't have playoff pitching. And it's obvious to anybody watching this thing, and they're kind of like losing the same way time and time again. And, you know, I do think, again, that, you know, with, you know, the heat's kind of on, or was on Friedman a bit. And now all of a sudden you kind of know, okay, well, he's not going, well, first of all, people are excited, obviously, just that Ohtani's here, right? So that was already going to take, you know, some heat off Friedman anyway. But now it's like, you know, the two guys are tied together. So I think, you know, Plaschke's absolutely right. This whole burden is now going to fall on Dave Roberts, you know, and he better win. You know, that's he's kind of, you know, I wouldn't say he's quite as unpopular as Brandon Staley was, but it's kind of close. A lot of times, you know, and baseball fans, I don't think really kind of understand the way these things work and the interplay between the front office and the dugout anymore. But yeah, a lot of people kind of blame, you know, all these October exits on Roberts as if, I mean, if he had the pitching, I think he would call that pitcher out of the bullpen, right? The reason these things don't work is because the team is constructed the way it is.
It is interesting with these teams, these analytics-driven teams, which I support. I think you want all the information as you can, but they basically, you know, imply that the manager isn't very important. And yet when things go wrong, it's the manager's fault. That's exactly. Always, you know, Billy Beane's a friend of mine. I appreciate. But like at some point, you're like, no. And I think he realized that when he fired Bob Guerin, who was a friend of his, kind of a nothing manager, and put Bob Melvin in there. It's like a real manager. At some point, if you think the manager is not important, then nothing is important that happens that, you know, and you can't realistically blame him for anything. The manager can change some things and pack some things, and you have to look at it that way. And it just seems weird that Roberts is evaluated on the scale of he's not that important, yet when they lose, it's his fault. That seems a little bit unfair. But let's violate the kind of the way we usually do this, and we'll go to another LA story. As I mentioned before, Chargers coach Brandon Staley fired, also with general manager Tom Telesco, which you had to. I thought they should have fired Telesco the previous time. He's been given a lot of chances to hire head coaches, a lot of tenures come and gone here. Clearly you're not surprised. No one's surprised after what happened last night, but what do you think went wrong? I mean, you know, Staley, you've been around there. What was the issue with Brandon Staley's kind of whole thing with the Chargers?
Yeah, it's you know, it's the kind of defense that he runs, right? It's a lot of it's based on, you know, disguises, and there's a certain amount of like this, right? It seems like their guys, the system itself wasn't very flexible, right? So it wasn't like they could kind of go out and just like grab whoever and kind of plug him in. Just because a guy was a good player in another type of system, it wasn't necessarily going to work out here, you know. And now, you know, I do think they felt good, you know, like last year, going into last season, right? He brought in Khalil Mack and Sebastian Joseph Day, guys who had played under him previously. So I think he kind of felt, okay, he's got his guys in here now. But it just never quite came together, right? Something was always kind of missing, you know, and it's one of those things too, right? The offense would play well and the defense would be horrible. Or like when the last few weeks, the defense has actually kind of started to come around. The offense was bad, right? They never were able to kind of play that kind of complementary football, I think, that every team strives to play. You know, and last night, what we just saw was just they just quit, yeah. You know. And I do wonder, you know, Staley, what I did like about him, right, was, you know, the first year that he came in, I kind of said this half jokingly, right? It's like, oh, you know, this franchise is cursed, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and he says, you know what? We've talked about that, right? That's the elephant in the room. That's the first thing, you know, kind of that, like, we need to address, right? And, you know, that's a risky thing, right? I mean, because
I don't love that.
Because, you know, if you conquer it, great, mm-hmm. right? But if you don't, that stuff starts seeping into guys' heads, you know? And I think, right, after the Jacksonville game, you know, Joey Bosa kind of talked about how when things started turning on them last year in that game, right, he was saying something along the lines of like, yeah, we just kind of knew this was going to unfold the way it did, you know? And I think that just kind of played out like on a bigger scale here. Instead of playing out over one football game, it started playing out over this like larger thing that where, okay, this isn't going right. Okay, we just lost our center, you know, here we go again type thing. And I just think in the end, like last night, we just saw a team just quit, right? There was no belief, just no commitment whatsoever. They just quit, right? And so, yeah, time to move. You know, again, it's a typical, the people of San Diego warned us about this, right? The Chargers every year. Cause I'm not going to lie, man. Going into this year, I thought like, maybe, right?
Yeah, because that great playoff game, that playoff game really
maybe,
showed up.
Maybe, you know.
We'll get to what they could do next, because I think, we'll see if they're set up to hire a guy like Jim Harbaugh, which would just make all the sense in the world. Was at University of San Diego. That's where he started his coaching career, head coaching career. Makes all the sense in the world. But before we get to that, from afar, I only was around him for a couple of the 49ers joint practices a couple years ago down there. And I read what I read. It just, to me, and that you're talking about him, you know, I address the curse. I address this. It just seemed like, look at me, take command. Everything was, look at me, address these things. He's addressed the charging thing. I addressed it. We're not going to do that. It's just, he's trying to head coach through Twitter. He was trying to head coach through social media. They're trying to please writers. Even Dylan Hernandez, which is an impossible feat. He just look at, he walked around a little bit, even at that practice. Like, he just wants people to see him coach. Look at me coach. Look at me do these things. And there are people who've done that who are good. No question. Some of that is part of taking command of a room. I get it. But, and I think he's a smart defensive coach. But I think he got transfixed by this love he got for going on fourth downs. You know, he didn't do it all the time, but he did it very showily, very stagily. And the analyst community just embraced him as, this is the guy who's doing it right. This is right. And yet fourth down decisions are independent. Like, they are in the moment. They aren't always right. They're not always wrong. And he loved being the darling of this community. And I don't want to put too much on the community because they're really smart people and I read them. But I just think he was always viewing how people looked at him. He was always trying to be perceived as a smart guy. And it wasn't as much coaching as it was playing to that crowd. And I think players get that eventually. They understand, like, wait a minute. He's not doing this because he thinks we're good. We can convert the fourth and two. He's doing it to get applauded on ESPN. And again, I'm not saying it's all that. I'm not saying this is, you can't ever do it like that, because some coaches still do it and they win. But I think it kind of is what you are. It is what you're understood in the locker room. I'll just, you know, Kyle Shanahan does not give a shit about what's said on ESPN. Sometimes to his detriment, but that's how you have. Bill Parcells didn't give a shit. You know, Bill Belichick, that's probably his problem now, is that he doesn't give, like, he just, you can't react to what someone is saying on an ESPN talk show and hope that they praise you. I guarantee you he's called people at ESPN to try to get them to see his way. I guarantee you he's done that. I've covered coaches like that. Steve Lavin was, he reminds me of a little bit of Steve Lavin, not as gregarious, but just this constant, you know, searching for approval. That doesn't work in the NFL. I've been around the NFL a lot. That doesn't work. And that's a really good point.
I think that kind of meshes a bit with what I'd heard was that, again, right, the players kind of just stop believing in it.
Yeah, it's like you're not making us better, right? It's partly about something else. And somewhat is, I don't like those, you know, dealing with those kind of people sometimes. I just don't. I like the hard asses much more. And I do think hard asses win more. So I'm getting my thing off on Staley. I've always kind of seen that in him. I think he's a smart coach. He's comes from the Vic Fangio school, and I'm close to Vic, but Vic is totally non-bullshit. Like, Vic is not that at all. So it's interesting to me. We've talked about this before. I think months, you know, whatever, when we started this, are they set up to possibly hire a guy like Jim Harbaugh? They certainly have not done that anytime in the recent. They, you know, basically bypassed Sean Payton. I mean, you know, who wanted that job. Obviously, there's a reason. It's Justin Herbert. Can they change who they are, bring in a general manager who's approved by Jim Harbaugh, and spend the $18 million, whatever it's going to be a year, to hire Jim Harbaugh?
You know, one thing that's kind of gone a little bit underreported, I think, right, is that there's evidently some strife within the Spanos family.
I know that.
The sister is now suing the brothers, right, saying, you know, I guess they're, right, some of the, she wants to sell whatever, and she's basically saying, like, hey, like, you know, my brothers are racking up this debt here.
Well, because they're running the Chargers.
Correct. And actually that this isn't, you know, and if they're in that type of situation, you know, because I do think we've seen, now it might not be right on the, you know, when kind of you view this from like a league-wide thing, it might not be like a huge deal, but the fact that they like fired Anthony Lynn, right, with a year left on his contract, for the Spanoses, that was actually kind of a recognition that, hey, we're not in San Diego, right? We're in this congested market. The fact that they, you know, I mean, I was, as bad as things were, and I wrote, you know, again, after the loss on Sunday, I wrote, hey, blow this whole thing up. I was kind of expecting this to happen at the end of the season. Now, granted, I mean, the way it went, I mean, it just went so horrendous that they didn't really have a choice here, but like, even that, right, letting a guy go in kind of the middle of the season. Now, again, here they probably didn't have a choice, but this is still kind of an acknowledgement, I feel, that they're in a different market. And again, if they are in the kind of financial situation that this lawsuit says they're in, they might actually have to kind of push all in at some point to save this family business of theirs, right? And so, you know, again, right, even with, like, you know, as obvious as it was, right, okay, you need, right, they need to sign Justin Herbert to a big extension, whatever, right? I mean, even with stuff like that, like, you got to put X amount of dollars, like, in escrow and stuff, right, to, you know, when you sign a deal like that. And there were questions about, like, okay, do they have the cash to do these things? You know, so far, like, you know, they have done everything that they've needed to do, I think, to be, at least from the ownership standpoint. I mean, I know whatever they did in San Diego, it's kind of one thing, but I think since they've come here, I do think that they've realized where they are, right? They're building a new practice facility out in El Segundo. I do think that the financial commitment, okay, now, obviously, this is going to be a huge step, right? This is going to be, you know, UCLA going out and hiring Chip Kelly type thing. This is going to, like, fundamentally kind of change this franchise if they go that route. But I kind of think that they're aware of the situation that they're in now, you know, and I think, yeah, you know, you wanted to do it ideally, you know, on a cheaper way, right? And so they kind of did this. Okay, well, right there, you know, this is kind of, he's falling off this Sean McVay tree, right? Here's this young, right? All these young whiz kids. Let's take one of them and see if we could do it this way. Now that this has failed, you know, again, I think that there's a lot of pressure for them to get this right. And a part of this, too, is the fact that, you know, just last year, even, there was a perception in L.A. that the Rams were declining, and the Chargers were kind of on the way up, right? And kind of it's the script is flipped entirely again this year. You know, you talk about guys being kind of like being, you know, what they're supposed to be. McVay has actually been very, very impressive this year, right? I think he's on one hand, he's playing with house money right now. There isn't pressure, but I'm kind of buying the, okay, this is a guy now, right? It's going to be a little bit of a different act than kind of the traditional, you know, right, hard ass football coach that you kind of described. This guy's going to be a little bit like trickier. I do think I was joking with Gary Klein. You know, the last time I talked to McVay, I told Gary afterwards, man, in 3 years, this guy's going to be able to, you know, lie to us however much he wants, because he's very clever with the way he, you know, he's very personable. You know, but McVay is kind of that guy. And so, again, you're looking at this. The Rams are going to have all this dead money coming off the books. I'm expecting them to, I mean, they're competitive right now with a crap roster. You know, when they actually get some players here next year, you know, they could be dangerous again. And again, I think the Chargers are very cognizant of their place in the market, you know. And so I wouldn't be completely shocked if this is the time when they finally kind of make that move, because, again, I what I think that they don't want is for, you know, this kind of, hey, they're the Chargers, everything's bound to go wrong, that type of narrative to follow them here.
Okay, let's. Is there a declining team you mentioned in the Bay Area you want to check in with? Is there something?
What's wrong with Draymond Green? I know this is just like so like almost like fish in the barrel type thing for you guys, but as I'm looking at it from up here, what's this guy like? What was that?
Yeah, he's a guy who was constantly on the edge, who's succeeded beyond, you know, what you would imagine his NBA physical talents are, although he has physical talents. He's just, he's not running and jumping like some of the top guys. And I think it's safe to say that maybe he feels some of that slipping away, even that edge slipping away. And he's pushing it beyond that. And he's reacting to maybe some young guys who are bouncing around him. And he's not used to this in a way that isn't winning. And I think, it, you know, the rumors are that even the Jordan Poole situation was Jordan Poole. And I think it was, I've heard this, he said nothing totally new or way out of bounds, you know, Warriors practice, kind of just regular trash talk. But it was something like, you know, you're not that good anymore. You've never been that good. And that you could see an older player get sensitive about that. And Draymond has reacted terrible ways. And I've said it, people have gotten really mad at me, but if you're going to find intent in the Nurkic thing, and you slow it down, it certainly looks like an intent. In live, I did not. I just thought it was a flail, and you end up in it's reckless, get thrown out, all those things. I didn't see pure intent to strike him. But if you see a pattern of Sabonis, then Gobert, then Nurkic, and you understand the NBA, you can. That's where the NBA would see, okay, there might be an intent. He was looking to get this guy. I don't know that he was. I'm not saying that he was. I didn't think so at the time, but he was looking to get Gobert. There's no question about that. And the NBA said, you are not doing this again. You are not doing this again. And Draymond couldn't control himself. You can just see, like, we see temperamental people who understand the things that they do are wrong, who understand that there's a line that they've crossed, who promise they won't do it again. And they get to that moment and they still do it. We see it in every walk of life. We see it everywhere, especially when times are tough, right? Especially when they're not looking so good. And then Draymond hasn't played terrible. He's actually played pretty good this season, but he's been ejected 3 times and now suspended for 6 games plus and counting. I think the league wants him out at some point. I think parts of the league, I should put it that way. I don't think Joe Dumars wants him out. I think Joe Dumars has been a big part of let's have counseling or let's come together, let's figure this out, let's make you right. I think Adam Silver or people around him don't want this anymore. And they've made it very clear. And there's heavy pressure from them that this behavior either ends or we get him out of here. And I understand part of it. They've made it super clear to him. But you get it when there's pressure on a dynasty. There's pressure on success. There's pressure. Like, you need to repeat what you've done, and you can't do it. And you're not sure that anybody, you know, like Klay Thompson isn't there. It's a ripple effect. Andrew Wiggins' career imploding, you know, before our eyes has dragged everything down. Klay Thompson's struggling, although he looked really good last night. He was going to start shooting again at some point, but he slowed down. That's put pressure on everybody. Now, Steph Curry responds to it by trying to play even better, by trying to support everybody, trying to bring the team up. Draymond at times will react that way by blowing up and doing something stupid and, you know, borderline violent. It's just the, you know, it's kind of built in this. And I, you know, there's questions about Steph's leadership or what Steve Kerr doing and all. It's all, but this was part of how they got the four championships, right? That's, you can't go back and say, you know what, it's all been wrong. This is, these are part of the, you know, kind of the deals, the wagers with themselves they made to get those four championships and trying for a fifth in position, trying to be, if they possibly are. That was part and parcel of this. Draymond's temper was back when he was in his 20s. This is what he's fuels him, has helped fuel them. They wanted him out there. He's played well. And this stuff has happened. It's speeding up. It's getting worse. But that's what also happens when you're aging and you're not as good. So I just look at it as the total entirety of the picture is they've got here in a certain way. They played a certain way. They've highlighted certain things, but also had weaknesses with those things that everything else helped kind of cover up, or not even cover up, or just kind of allay. And as the talent is receding, the trouble spots are still there. And in fact, they're getting worse because there's more to deal with. There's more pressure. There's more responsibility that they can't handle. And that's what we're seeing. We're blowing up here. So that's a long way of saying.
My question, though, right, is, are these, is this really the same thing? You know, because I do think that, like, the temper, right, it served of like a legitimate, like, purpose before, right? At least from the outside, that's the feel that I had, where especially when your best players are kind of like finesse guys like Steph and Clay, right? Having that guy that you kind of not sure, right, if you're playing against him, having that like time bomb guy on the other side, okay, you got to respect him a little bit, right? Because this guy might do something crazy, you know? Whereas like now it feels, right, especially a guy like Draymond Green, who, like you said, is an overachiever. Those guys become overachievers kind of by maximizing every little thing, right? And using that to their advantage to kind of, right, you know, they make the most of like what they have. This just kind of feels a little like self-destructive.
That's part of that. Right? But that's always been part of it. It's always been part of it. And, you know, flicking LeBron in the groin right after you're told by the league, you just kick Steven Adams in the balls. You cannot do this anymore. You can't, you know, Warriors fans got all mad. It wasn't that bad. He was told, do not do this anymore. Absolutely. And in the finals, up 3-1, he couldn't help himself. There is something, there is a mania there that we all know with Draymond. Punching Jordan Poole is the worst crossing the line you can possibly, a teammate in a practice, and he just can't help himself. I do think it's accelerating as his skills decline, as the team declines, and they either fix that or he's not going to be in the league very much longer. I mean, I've had people in the league who just, you know, texted me, it's over. Now, who knows? They're just people observing. They're not in the decision-making point of this, but it's close to over, Dylan. And it was never going to end pretty. Like we all, I mean, with the Warriors, they've planned possibly alternate ways out of this with Draymond. Drafting James Wiseman was part of that. Drafting Jonathan Kuminga clearly hasn't all the way worked or worked at all. But Draymond just kept on playing well. And that's the deal with the devil. Like, you deal with it. At some point, you're going to lose a bit of your soul. And some of that's happening here. It's natural, but it's not going to be pretty. All right, we got to wrap this up, Dylan. We've been passing this off way too much. Who won the week, LA or the Bay Area? Who won the week? I think that one might be pretty clear.
I mean, I think it comes down to the Ohtani thing, right? You know,
sign Ohtani for $2 million a year. Was that okay? And trade, use that money you save for Tyler Glass. Now, I think the Dodgers are setting up for something very interesting. So I'm going to say LA won. What do you say? You're saying?
I got to go with LA. I can't. I don't really know how to spin this any other way.
LA. Victory, Dylan Hernandez, as always. And he took down Brandon Staley. All right, we got to go. Time is running short here. Thank you so much, everybody. That is the show for today.